Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. We're very honored and excited to be joined by Dr. Martin Moore-Eed. For over 40 years, Dr. Moore-Eed has been a leading world expert on circadian clocks and the health problems caused by electric light at night. As a professor at Harvard Medical School 1975 to 1998, he led the team that located, the suprachiasmatic nucleus. He'll say how that sounds in a second. The biological clock in the human brain that controls the timing of sleep and wake. He pioneered research on how circadian clocks regulate the timing of body functions. Since 2010, he has led the Circadian Lighting Research Center team that identified the key blue signal that synchronizes circadian clocks and developed patented LED lights, which provide circadian optimized light across day and night based on comprehensive medical research. The effectiveness of these circadian modulated lights in improving health and well-being has been validated by installing them in the 24-hour operations of Fortune 500 companies and hospitals. He has published over 180 scientific articles and authored 10 books, including the best-selling books The Clocks That Time Us and The 24-Hour Society. His latest book, The Light Doctor, The Science and Solution for Replacing Your Lights Now to Protect Your Health, has been released as a serial on Substack. All these links, there's a bunch of links here, folks, will be put on the GetAGripOnLighting.com website, Greg. But before, we got to go to TCPI.com, Greg Garrick.
That's right. And we're talking their Solistic line of lamps, and I think we're going to get into this today. But they actually have product that is mimics the natural sunlight without harsh UV or blue spikes found in other LED sources. Now they have it in their Starlight lamp, which kind of looks like a flood. They also have it in a PAR lamp, and they have a Type A and Type B T8 linear lamp that all has this capability. It's an R9 of greater than 95, a CRI of 97, multiple Kelvin temps, and getting rid of that blue light. That's what it's all about, TCP.
And you know what? I love going into their new portal, Greg. It's way better. They've done such a great job with the new portal. And guys, gals, if you're out there selling light bulbs to people every day, TCP has a lot of stuff on that website, man. They sell a lot of great products and solutions. And the Solistic line is just another one of them. So go to TCPI.com. And of course, all these gangsters in Nailed, that's right, all you distributors out there, we're going to go and hang out in September in Dallas, Texas. That's right, America's Lighting Convention's going down. What is it, September 19th, Greg Eric?
Oh, put me on the spot, 18th through the 20th.
Ooh, come on down. I'll be there, Greg will be there, and all of our friends from Nailed, and we're going to be talking about selling lighting. So go, if you want to join us, go to naild.org. Dr. Martin Moore-Eed, welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
It's good to be with you guys.
So we see here that you own the domain name circadian.com. You've been doing this a while. And, you know, the term is something that it never really crossed my mind, at least. I don't have any medical background or anything, but it's been really slammed into us now in the last, I would say, 5 years in the lighting industry. What got you? You started in 1983 on this circadian?
75, it looks like.
Well, the website, or like the company, sorry, Circadian.
Yeah. I found a consulting company out of Harvard when I was at Harvard because we are making all these breakthroughs in terms of understanding how the clocks in our brains are timing sleep and wake and hormones. And when you get them disrupted, the people get sick. So companies started coming to me in the Fortune 500 and other companies that run 24/7 and saying, what do we do about our guys that have to be there 24/7. They're running a pipeline control room, or they're flying planes, or they're running trains, or they're manufacturing, whatever runs 24/7, hospitals, the like. What do we do about it? And out of that, we developed a consulting company called Circadian. You're right. We got in right at very early on. So as soon as domain names were there, it's amazing what you could grab in those early days. The only one I missed was sleep.com. But other than that, I got a whole bunch of them. But essentially, at that time, and so that's my background, and that's how I got aware of this issue with light, because we were dealing with, you know, people working around the clock, And when the research started to come out in the early 2000s, showing increased risk of breast cancer and prostate cancer and a number of other things, people said, what do? We cannot shut down our factories. We can't shut down our businesses. We have to run 24/7. What do we do about it? And that's where I really turned and focused attention on what could be done and what was causing this harmful effects of light at night. And we've learned a ton since and come up with a number of very effective solutions, but it's based on understanding what's causing the problem. And that is turns out to be a rather narrow band of, in the blue part of the spectrum that's causing all the havoc. So I'll let you ask questions because I can go on and give you a talk.
I'm just curious. You mentioned the 24/7 work day or work schedule. Is there any idea when that started? Like, I know the electric light obviously advanced it, but when did companies start saying, you know what, we're going to go full time every day, all day?
Well, I mean, if you look back to the beginning, when Edison invented light bulb, he enabled many, many businesses to do it. Now, before then, you know, ships at sea were always 24/7, right? You could, you know, navigators and all the rest, going back to Roman times. But in a major scale, it was in the early 1890s, as light became available, freely available, we now could work at night. People started working shifts around the clock. Mm. And that then spread. And of course, it really accelerated after the Second World War. And so I wrote a book about it back in 1980s called The 24-Hour Society, showing this huge growth. So more than 20% of the working population works shifts around the clock. And that's the most extreme case, all right? Now, what we know now is all of us affected by electric light in the evenings and everything else, and all of us have some effect of the problem. And a large number of people sleep at night with the lights on. Amazing statistic. Maybe 40% of adults sleep with the lights on.
Particularly. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is extraordinary. So, and that causes, and guess what happens when that happens? Well, there is an increased risk of obesity, diabetes, hypertension. In fact, in elderly people, it's double the rate when people are sleeping with the lights on. So it's touching a lot of people. So it's not just those shift workers, because it always used to be a problem. Oh, those shift workers, well, they accept that. That's their lot. And, you know, they have to put up with all that. That's their job. But all of us now these days are impacted by light, and a lot of people are using, and of course the other big change is as the fluorescence came along, and that was really in the 1960s, 70s when they really started putting fluorescent lights in. Mm. They were the first really blue rich lights, right? And they have almost as much blue as LEDs. And that the breast cancer rate jumped fourfold between 1970 and 2010.
You know, I was going to say, what fascinates me about you is you predate the LED era and all the talk of this stuff by decades. Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, so,
And that's important. That's very important, by the way, because people label this as an LED problem. It's not an LED problem. LEDs actually have got a solution because you can engineer LEDs, spectrally engineer them to what you want. But it's the classic problem is blue rich light you need during the day. That is essential. At night, as soon as the dusk occurs, you want to get rid of all the blue. So it's really a two-stage problem, right? And so the big message is lights cannot be static. You're putting in static lights and people are working 9 to 5, fine. You can do it, right? But if people are working into the evenings, that's when people get into problems with static lights because they're never changing. And, you need a lot of blue during the day to keep alert and to keep sleep well and everything else. At night, you've just got to get rid of that blue.
So this, oftentimes I also host a podcast called the Restoring Darkness podcast, and that's a whole other story. But one of the things that occurred to me is that, this idea, like, humans are not a nocturnal species, Dr. Moraid. They're not.
Yep.
And absolutely. So when you're talking about the shift workers, I've never gotten a real clean answer on this, and I'm going to hit you with it and see what you think. So if you're a day shift worker and you have light at night, you want to eliminate that blue, right? Yeah, but if you're a night shift worker, do you want the blue at night? And then go home and put out blackout curtains so you're pretending the day is the night? Or how do you handle that?
The answer is that's a big mistake to do that because blue light, rich light at night really knocks you into a different time zone. And the problem is it may help you in the short term on a shift or two, right? But go back home, you're now totally out of whack. It's like you've got a major case of jet lag. And people don't have the ability to shift it back. That was the very first experiments. People thought, well, this is easy. We'll just crank up the lighting at night, increase the blue at night. We'll have people more alert. And indeed, you can show that. But the problem is you really screwed up their health. But there is a solution because what's really interesting, and this came out of our research and research of others, is that you can substitute violet light down right down in the sort of 415, 420 range, which doesn't trigger the circadian system. It still whitens up the light, but it also is alerting. It's actually more alerting than blue light. So it's actually the shorter the wavelength, the more alerting. It's not the blue per se. So therefore, we've put lights in over, you know, dozens, literally dozens of Fortune 500 control rooms and so forth. And people are performing better, they're more awake, and their sleep also is better. Their circadian clocks are better because we're actually using blue-rich light during the day and light with violet in it during the night, but very low blue. That really is the solution.
So the solution is not to pretend it's day at night. That's a bad idea. That's the worst thing you can do for someone. Okay.
You
So
just
thank
don't
you.
want to screw it. Don't screw whatever you do, don't screw up the clocks. Keep yourself synchronized as best as possible day and night. Your sleep will recover pretty well, but don't screw up your fundamental health by, you know, shining blue rich light at night.
Would it be worthwhile to assert that non-essential services should just close at night? Like this idea of a 24-hour Walmart or, you know, these areas. What I mean, I understand hospitals have to be open, police stations have to be open. You know, these things. There's no way out of that. But when we're looking at areas where do we really need to buy a bag of Doritos at 2 in the morning? You know what I'm saying? Is
Well,
it
that's,
is,
I mean, I wouldn't, yeah, it's a challenge, right? In other words, that whole economy breeds other economies. So you have 24-hour childcare. I mean, I did a special with the BBC. It went around the world. You know, we found all these things. 24-hour childcare was going on because people had to work these shifts. But it's a lot of essential parts of the economy. You know, it's not only the nurses and but most manufacturing, it's so much more efficient to run your facility 24/7. In terms of you get 168 productive hours out of the week instead of 40 and then to start up and shut down. Certain things like oil, chemical processing, and the like, you just can't shut down. People want to fly, you know, to different places in the world. You know, we've worked with major airlines like American Airlines and Delta. So that's a whole another conversation. But by the way, the blue background, I don't know if your viewers see this blue background screen, but that blue background screen is about the color, almost a sky blue color. That's a key signal for the biological clock. Well, I mentioned it, by the way. So just you're getting it's coming off your my computer screen from you.
So the but when we're talking about the and I'm going to throw it back to Greg after this, Greg. I know that you're ready to go there. But I'll just finish with this before we go over to him. The I've interviewed many people, scientists, researchers on this particular topic, and while it's kind of been intuited by my own review of their findings, and but that is that the key here is to improve people's sleep. But the benefits come all from the sleep improvement. Is that true in your mind, or is there are there improvements actually directly from the light? Or is it just better sleep that you get the results from?
No, sleep is just one of many things that
Oh,
benefit. So
okay.
basically, what you're doing is you're affecting just a very brief word about the clocks, right? There's a master clock in the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, just to get the pronunciation right. Okay. By the way, my favorite typo was suprachiasmatic nucleus. I love that. But it's super, just not a confusion. It's the suprachiasmatic nucleus. That's the master clock, right? And that is direct connection from the eyes, from these blue receptors in the eyes, these retinal ganglion cells. But there are multiple clocks in the body, and the problem, the ill health and all sorts of it, is because almost every cell in the body has its own clock, and they can all get out of step with each other. So it's not just the sleep. It's actually, and melatonin is one of the cues, but there are others too in the hormones that keep our clocks normally in sync. So that state of malaise and brain fog that you get into, you know, jet lag or working shifts or not getting enough sleep, is only one part of the problem. So it's not a sleep cure. You want to, it helps sleep. That's a great endpoint. But it, you know, for example, people who are exposed to blue light at night will have a problem with their glucose tolerance, their ability to handle sugar. They get diabetic. I can make you, if I just put you under blue light at night, I can make you pre-diabetic, you know, by the end of the night. And so that's one of the things that that insulin resistance that occurs is one of the problems that occurs because of this blue light. You're fundamentally disrupting the body systems and so forth. So that's one of the things you have to do.
And you touched on at the beginning the different lighting technologies and how when you started LEDs weren't even around. What were the issues then and compared to what they are now, and have they advanced? I assume to some degree, yes. But
well, I mean, the big thing of this era is energy efficiency, right? And that's been the DOE really putting its hand on this whole thing. And what that was resulting in is the banning of the incandescent light bulb. You know, as of, I think, 12 days from now, it's illegal to sell incandescent light bulbs or halogens, right? You've got technology. We're seeing now 5 or 6 states have already banned fluorescent lights for different concerns. So we've actually focused everything into LEDs. But essentially, what's the key is the spectral content and the intensity of the light is the key. So whatever the technology. Now, the advantage of incandescence, they were only 4% blue, whereas in a typical LED light, you know, 4,000 Kelvin LED is around 14 to 18% blue. And if you go up to 5,000 Kelvin or something like that, you know, you're already pushing, you know, 18, 20% blue. But the fluorescence equally, the 4100 Kelvin classic fluorescent white light that's around everywhere, you know, that's pushing 15% blue, for example. So it's the amount of blue that's in that light. And as I say, the problem with the conventional lights is they're not good for day and they're not good for night. Because what we do know from all the science, and I've been putting it all together, is there is a certain level of blue you need to see during the day, and you don't get it from the classic LEDs and fluorescents. You actually need more. So you need something with heightened blue in it during the day for health, and at night you need less. So it's neither good for day or night, the standard LED and fluorescents that we see. And just changing color temperature doesn't fix the thing, at least within the narrow range. Move it down to 2700 Kelvin, you're still at 8% blue. Now, if you go down to 1800 Kelvin and get that yellowish light, right, now you're down less than 2% blue. So what you want to look for is typically less than 2% blue during the nighttime hours, more than 20% blue during the daytime hours. That's the basic, you know, at normal illumination levels, that's a rough guide. And then we can, you know, and then you can be more exact about how much light is coming to people and where it's going. What matters also is light coming into the eyes, not on the desktop. You know, a number of things about designing space that need to be paid attention to.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation that it's not about the color, it's the wavelength of the blue that matters. And so what we've heard in our discussions with on the topic of darkness restoration for exterior situations is that by coating a blue LED, you don't remove the damage. Is that correct? That's still that wavelength. You're just changing, or you're kind of filtering the color of the wavelength. You're not actually changing it. Is that true, or am I incorrect about that?
Well, what you're doing with an LED is, first of all, you're picking an initial dye or chip that produces a rather pure color, right? Mm-hmm. And we find most of our LEDs today around 450 nanometers blue. That's where they are. And why is that? It's the most efficient way of converting electricity into light around that. Now, to get that would just give you a pure blue signal, right? Just blue light. what you do is coat it with phosphors, and those phosphors are chemicals that absorb the blue and then emit it at different frequencies. And that's the art of building lights. The trouble is you never get rid of that original source. So you've still got a spike in the blue, but it's muted out and spread out into the other wavelengths in order to create the light spectrum you want. So that's really the issue, but you need to use a chip with a different, actually the most effective for circadian purposes, as I say, is use chips around 415, 420 in the violet at night, which is outside the range that really screws up the biological clock. And during the day, you want to be around 480. 480 is around where in regularly light adapted people, that are most sensitive for the circadian clock. That's its signal. It's a fascinating signal, by the way. I mean, if I tell you a quick story, which is amazing to me when I found it out. If you go and dangle a spectrophotometer deep into the ocean, you find as you get deeper and deeper, all the colors of the sun is, of course, a full spectrum, right? All the colors of the rainbow from violet to red are in the sunlight. But sunlight is absorbed by seawater, but what gets absorbed is the reds and the yellows and the greens and the violets and everything else. And the only thing left there is pure 480 nanometer blue, right? By the time you get to the ocean depths, which is amazing. So in other words, but that's where life began. So when life began, it only saw 480, right, 475, 480 nanometer blue light. And so that's how we evolved. That is the signal. And so that goes back, way back in billions of years, essentially, of when life began. So what we're talking about is this age-old signal is being preserved all the way through. And what's amazing in the ocean, you can find little one-cell, single-cell organisms. They have a blue detector, they have a circadian clock, and they produce melatonin. So that whole apparatus was invented way, way back in evolution, right? And then we've just preserved it because it's a fundamental, it's a thing that works. So when we're looking at building light, we've got to give ourselves that 480 blue. That's the key signal. And so if you start looking at lights that are circadian design for day, their spike is around 480. You know, they're really hitting on that. And then, of course, as I say, removing it at night.
So these, you mentioned that you guys, or you developed a patented LED light that actually help do this. What exactly is the product that you put together?
Well, what we did is once we figured out this blue, where it was, I mean, there's some confusion out there with various circadian models. And because a lot of the early work was done the way photobiologists, people who study light and eyes use, which they start with people fully dark adapted. In other words, they put them in the dark, put blindfolds on them, they put drops in their eyes, and then they take off the blindfold and shine a light in their eyes, right? And they do it for about 30 minutes, right? Well, the dark adapted is when you've been in pitch darkness for a long time and now you can see in the dark, is almost, right? That eye is a very different eye. We said, no, that doesn't make sense to us. Let's look at people who have been all day in for 12 hours or more under regular lights. And it turns out the story is that within the first hour or two, you get fully light adapted and your eyes adjust. And now it is this blue signal that matters. It's not the green and so forth. So some of those other models have got too much green in them and all the rest. That's another whole story. But essentially, that's how we understood it. Now, once we understood exactly where that problem was, where it was around 480 or so, now we said, okay, how do we engineer lights that don't have it? Well, the first way we did it is you can filter it out, right? You can put a filter that takes everything below 500 and remove it. That ends up with a nasty yellow orange type color. You've seen some of these glasses that people use, eyewear for blue blocking, the really the yellow orange ones. They're taking it all out. So that's good.
Yeah, it's like an amber color. It's like an amber, honey color, sort of amber, orangey color type of thing
when you take the blue out. So we said, okay, but we've discovered that there isn't sensitivity down here. What if we built LEDs, and it was quite an effort to find manufacturers, LED makers who would actually build them for us. We found, what if we built them with a spike around 415, 420 in the violet, right? Lo and behold, when you do that, the light becomes white again. You could now convert the yellow light into in a reasonable white light. And also you don't disturb the clock. And so that was, and then having discovered that, we patented it. And we got there first with that patent and got that then filed worldwide. We've licensed it to a number of leading lighting companies and so forth. But also Philips just missed us. I think they filed later than us. Other companies filed later than us. So we got there, but it's a solution that's been confirmed by several people of how to solve this problem. So you can either use, 1800 Kelvin light or less, right, which is yellow, or you can use light that is white and therefore more usable, but has this violet peak. Those are the two really effective solutions to getting nighttime lighting.
So the idea of Kelvin temperature, Doc,
yes.
Does that, so like, could you have a 4,000 Kelvin with this violet light? Like, can you mimic the Kelvin temperature scale using violet the way that you could when you're using that blue base?
You can, but it's a little harder to get up to higher Kelvins with the violet and the blue. What we settled on, we said, okay, we seem to think people like lights that's between 3,000 and 4,000. That was our target, right? Yeah. So well, let's keep in that range. So we managed to get up to about 3,300 Kelvin in some of our solutions.
That's nice. That's a nice color, especially for nighttime.
Yeah. And we find people really like that that type of color. So that works well. So you can get into the low 3,000s with a violet pump.
Hmm. The you were talking about the billion-year-old primordial soup and how we started as creatures with melatonin and all this sort of stuff. I'm going to go back a little bit in time, but maybe a couple hundred thousand years, which is, I think, enough for evolution, and talk a little bit about firelight. Is there something, and I've been asking so many people this question, and nobody seems to know. I think there's something with human beings and evolution and how we are today, and that has something to do with the tranquility, security, and safety response we have to firelight, sitting around fires, and to that color temperature. It seems to deliver the safety and security feeling while also allowing people to feel tranquil and relaxed and sort of settling down. Is there any scientific evidence, or is there any proof that color temperature, that 1800 or 2000 color temperature of fire, has that effect? And is there any research that you know of, Doc?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I just, as part of my book that I'm writing, the Light Doctor, I'm sort of going back and checking things rather than just relying on sources of the literature, right? So I got a fire pit going in my backyard and put my spectral photometer there. Really fascinating. It's really low in blue. That's the first thing, right?
Yeah.
Extremely low in blue. It's 1% or less blue in it. And it really builds up exponentially towards the red. So the answer was, our caveman ancestors, or before, when fire first invented fire, did not screw up their clocks by using fire because there was no blue in it, right? Now, candles came along and they've got slightly more blue, but still very low, 1.5% blue in candles. So the candlelit era, which took us basically up to Edison, again, very little blue. So what happened is Edison came along and he tried to mimic candlelight because that's what people were used to. He got about 4% blue, all right? And then we came along, of course, with the fluorescence and the LEDs eventually, where people started looking for energy efficiency and all the rest of it, and that became the driver. And we ended up really distorting the amount of blue. But the answer is yes, it is a calming effect. Blue energizes you, right? That's one of the things it does. It energizes you. During the day, it's a good thing. You want to be energized. You want to be able to keep alert, do your job, whatever. But at night, if you want to calm down, yes, getting rid of that blue is quite very helpful.
Saying is not only is it helpful to get rid of the blue, actually having the warmer colors are helpful in and of themselves.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. It has a good psychological calming down effect and so forth. So, yes.
Wow. Greg.
Now, in terms of the circadian rhythm, is lighting the most important factor when you consider what disrupts it? Or are there other things that you look into with your research company?
Yes, I mean, one of the big questions is what is the clue that keeps us in sync with day night? And it clearly the major one is lighting, but food is also the timing of food intake is also a cue too. For example, the timing you have meals can have some effect, but it's a much less strong effect. The major effect is this light. So if you control the light and control the spectral quantity of the light, it's you don't even have to change the intensity very much or the color very much, but as long as the content either gives the strong blue or removes the strong blue, that's the thing you need for your health and keeping you in sync.
In your new book, you've mentioned a little bit about, but what exactly are you going to be discussing in the Light Doctor?
Well, really we're at a point now where the data is in and the evidence is in, and the scientists know this issue and understand the issue. The general public and even the lighting buying public does not know it, right? And so this is one of the amazing things. So one of the things I did is I did a survey of 250 of the leading scientists in this field who've published many of the papers. And I said, what can we agree on? And out of that consensus, they all agreed that light at night is causing breast cancer and heart disease and diabetes and obesity. They all agreed that the key signal was around 480 in the blue. They all agreed that that in fact LED lights, one of the conclusions of these 250 scientists from around the world who are working on this was LED lights should be sold now with a warning label saying,
Get out of
maybe
here.
harmful if used at night. Now that's pretty controversial, but because there is a disruptive effect of that blue if you use it, in the evening hours and late into the night. So now that's, but I said, look.
This is why, listen, and I know you mentioned it earlier in the show, that you the fluorescent, the bans of light bulbs and all this sort of stuff. Now we're lighting distributors, Greg and I. We sell light bulbs to the public every day. No one ever asked us. I think light bulb bans are the stupidest possible thing you could do. Okay? Not because okay, so blanket bans, where they're banning a technology type. If you just called me up and said, hey, Michael, we want to get rid of 99% of all mercury-based lamps, there's probably 10 SKUs, Greg. I mean, what is there? I mean, maybe 50 SKUs. If you just got rid of 50 SKUs, all of which have LED replacements already in the market for them. The problem is there's millions of weird bulbs in that last 3% that can't be replaced by LED. And so you're creating garbage, okay? But the other thing is that sometimes we take lighting for granted so much that we rush forward every time there's some sort of energy efficiency gain and try to say, get all this other crap out of here. And then with LEDs, we created all these problems like flicker and light pollution and color temperature in the rush. And I'm not doubting the societal benefits of energy efficiency. I'm just saying, whoa, just slow down a little bit sometimes.
Well, if you think it's bad, we've just got a 45 lumens per watt, metric in that metric, that rule that goes in August 1, that therefore incandescents can't match and halogens can't match, right? That's why they're gone. There is a new rule out there that's being worked on to raise that whole number up to 110, 120 lumens per watt. Well, once you do that, you get rid of any type of healthy lighting. All you get is the really harsh blue pump LEDs is the whole thing left. It's crazy. And so what, so getting back to my book, the book is saying, okay, it's time to educate anything. Write a book that me that I'm going to do. It's a book that I'm releasing, by the way, on Substack, and we can put a link up on your site. And I'm releasing a chapter every week or two. And there's also a podcast I do, an audio of I do with the book as well. And the idea is writing it for everybody in the world who wants to know about light, but in a friendly, easy way to digest the
Beautiful.
information. And
Beautiful.
so and it basically tells a story. What are all these medical problems that are occurring? Why, what, how are we misusing light? What's the evidence for the biological clock for blue and all that stuff? How were better lights invented? And then what lights are available now, and where can you find them, and how do they work? Right, so basically, it's and that's the book. So I'd encourage all your watchers and viewers to you know, just do it. It's a free subscription. You can get several chapters to start with for free. And basically it's written for to try to be user friendly. Because as I said, one of the somebody once commented recently, all the scientists understand that, but they never talk to their neighbors, and their neighbors haven't got a clue, right? And so you know, this,
well, that's the science has a big problem. Science has a marketing problem.
Yeah, it does. It does, and it gets itself into scientists get into what I'd like to call in science a high fog index. You know, the more fog you can create around what you're saying, the more erudite you think you're appearing. In reality, if you can't communicate science, it's pointless, right? In other words, you've got to be able to communicate it. And this is a field that affects everybody. And the principles are pretty straightforward and interesting. It's interesting stuff. Like I told you what happened in the oceans eons ago, yeah. Right? What happens now with, you know, people who get blue light in the evenings and the, and it's not just, there are a lot of health issues, but then how do we live our best? And so, you know, just another quick one, right? Young women having their first menstrual period, you know, young girls, teenage girls, it used to be 17 years old before Edison came along. Now it's 12 years old.
Yeah, it is right? Young. It's getting
really
younger.
Screwed
too.
It up with all the use of blue light and with
you think is it is that air. Like a you can draw the line between those two things, because I've heard a lot of different competing theories about why that's happened. Because there's been other things that have but you're saying that it's a contributor, or you're drawing a direct line from the use of high blue spectrum lighting to the early onset of female puberty.
Yeah, well, I'm saying never anything is all one black and white answer, right? Okay, but it's a significant. You've got to look at what's happening, and the more you look at this thing, the more you see how vital it is for you to live a life that is healthy. I mean, a healthy life means getting a good dose of get out in the daytime, mm-hmm. right? Every day, preferably in the morning. That's when the biological clock is most effectively synchronized. Go for a walk, whatever, take the dog, whatever, get out, right? They get a dose there. We all need a light diet, right? Mm. Light diet should be getting a good, rich blue light, especially in the mornings. It should be a diet that's got low in blue in the evenings. And I think also bringing down the color temperature, as you said, as you get late into the evening is very helpful in just calming down, ready for sleep. And then sleep in the dark. For heaven's sake, don't sleep with the lights on. And so those are just, you know, your basic light diet rules. It's pretty simple, but you know, far too many people don't follow it. Hmm.
So that's interesting. You say, okay, so we need a light diet, but then we also need the right food. So we need the right light. How do we get people the right light? Like as a lighting distributor, or let's say I own a factory and I run it 24/7. What do I do as a factory owner to make sure my employees have the right lighting?
Get those violet bad boys in there.
Well, first of all, there is a whole host of lights coming onto the market.
Yes.
One of the companies that I have acquired the rights to a patent is Chorus, Ecosense Lighting. And they're coming up with a whole line of office lighting as well as home lighting that has this technology in it.
Now, can it be tunable, or does it have to be two different light fixtures?
It can be tunable, absolutely, but you've got to make sure, you know, the tunability is really using, yeah, if you've got two rays of LEDs, right, and you can go between, back and forth between them, as that's what a lot of tunable things are doing, right, yes, you can do it, but essentially you've got a very different spectrum you're doing, but you want to transition gradually from one to the other. Now, other major lighting companies like Acuity and H.E. Williams have licensed our technology, for example. So there's a variety of companies that now have that technology. And we're going to see it coming more and more into the fore. I think the lighting industry is waking up. The problem is the DOE is fast asleep. I mean, at least they're on a mission to really destroy any type of health out of lighting. And the reason is, by the way, the problem is lumens, right? We all look at lumens, but all lumens is measuring a part of the spectrum that peaks in the green around 555 in the green, right? It does not look, lumens don't look at red, doesn't look at red light. It does not look at violet light. It doesn't look very much at blue light, right? So they're managing, they want to manage lumens. And the problem is, if you get a metric that's the wrong metric, so sunlight doesn't have many lumens to it compared to how bright it is, right? Because it's a broad spectrum. So we've got a DOE trying to establish policy on lumens per watt. What you really want to have is useful light per watt or healthy light per watt, right? And that's why we've been messing around with other ideas, like, for example, coming up with something called Blumens, which is which measures the amount of that blue per lumen, right? But you know, we've got it's an uphill battle, as you know. It's an industry that's
The race for lumens per watt has caused nothing but trouble, in my opinion. I mean, I shouldn't say the race. The blind focus, and I'm putting the hands behind my eyes, on lumens per watt for the last 10 or 12 years has been nothing but a catastrophe, I think, in many ways. IR, infrared light. Is there anything to that? I've heard different murmurs that we need a certain amount of IR. It penetrates. We can only get it from the sun. No, you can get it from incandescent lights. You know, all this kind of stuff. How does IR get into the mix? Infrared.
Well, what's really interesting about IR, infrared, is that it actually penetrates deep into, it could penetrate into the skull, for example. And now there are all sorts of what are called photobiomodulation type technologies where they pulse light of different sorts. And they had healing properties. So that research is coming along. There are treatments of dementia that involve pulsing light in a particular frequency, for example. There are a variety of solutions that use infrared or use other parts of the spectrum. So the answer is we've got to use the whole spectrum. There are parts of the green in the spectrum that are actually very effective at mitigating migraines, treating migraines. So one of the things we're going to learn is there's a full spectrum, guys, of light. It's not just white light is just something that is really a mixture of everything, right? But it's, you know, there are different parts of that spectrum. Down in the UV, we've got light that will kill bacteria. Down in the violet, you know, around 405, we can kill a lot of bacteria and viruses on the surface. So we've got to be able to use the full power of the spectrum. The beautiful thing about the sun, its healing power, it's because it's so full spectrum, right? And, you know, but replacing it with LEDs that are just purely built on lumens per watt is the most short-sighted, narrow, as you say, blinders-on approach. And it's leading us down a path of, it's, you know, with a bunch of engineers, quite frankly, who don't understand much about health and light and other impacts of light. Beyond simply that energy mission.
It's taken electric light and turned it into light pollution. That's what it's done. And it's toxic. I got one more question for you. I interviewed a couple guys, and maybe just a comment. Maybe you say, I mean, we're coming up on almost 45 minutes, if you can believe it. So these shows just go by so fast sometimes, Greg. They were talking about, on the Restoring Darkness podcast, the effect of high Kelvin temperature white light on the oceans. So our human anthropogenic light pollution shining out onto the seas and really destroying a lot of animal wildlife on the oceans. And it goes deep into the oceans, this fire, especially the high blue light. And I can't remember, Scott, what was it, 2 miles or 3 miles offshore? The light will penetrate into the water and cause problems. And so, you know, this blue light thing is a huge environmental problem. It is pollution. It is absolutely pollution, and we need to treat it as such.
Yeah, there are two issues, right? Indoors, I think you're entitled to have the light that humans need, right? I mean, you don't want to you don't really worry too much about other species. Outdoors, we're doing huge damage, and it's not just, you know, in the oceans, it's out in the wildlife, it's the, you know, interfere with breeding cycles, feeding cycles, everything else. We're doing huge ecological damage with that light pollution. And as you say, you saw the Maui just put in a rule that all lights there should have less than 2% blue outdoor lighting. And in fact, that lighting is now, LumiLED has just come up with a new lights that are less than 2% blue. And they're really a 2% blue from 400 to 500 nanometers. So that to address that problem, because I think we're just becoming very conscious that this drive towards lumens is nuts for our economy, and it's It's a bigger pollut. It's one of our biggest pollutants, and we're racing down trying to solve a climate problem with a solution that's going to render, almost kill far more in terms of flora and fauna than the climate problem is at this point in
Yeah,
time.
I mean, it's grotesque. When you start looking into light pollution, it's grotesque, like a million dead birds. Like, has anyone ever seen that? Like, you know how many that the bodies everywhere? It's light pollution is pollution, and the EPA should call wasted light at night hazardous waste. Greg, you wanted to finish it off here for us at 45
Yeah,
minutes.
I just had one question for you to, and then any final comments you have. But what is your technology called? I never got the name of it. The lighting
Well,
that you make.
basically, is what we want to look for is circadian lighting, or the key thing is understanding the difference between true circadian lighting or certified circadian lighting and what people call circadian. Circadian is not just changing the color temperature by a bit; it's really meeting those targets of the less than 2% blue, the greater than during the night, greater than 2% during the day, greater than 20% light during the day. That's circadian lighting, and it's just a question of really we're coming together in the industry to try to make it really clear what is true circadian lighting and make sure we don't get too much mislabeling going on. Because just mildly changing color temperature from 2700 to 4000 is not circadian lighting.
Well, that was a heck of a Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Dr. Martin Moreid, folks. Any final thoughts, Dr. Moreid?
Well, I encourage you all and all your viewers to sign up on Substack. It's lightdrmartinmoreid.substack.com. You'll see each chapters are coming out now, and they're coming out on a regular basis. And we've got a lot of people, thousands of people already reading the book. So it's produced as a serial. So it's coming out, every couple of weeks as a new chapter comes out. And it's going to be something I really encourage everyone to join in and join in the comments and everything else, because there's a lot of learning to be done, and it's fun to have this conversation.
Wow, Greg, you got to go to TCPI.com, buddy.
That's right.
Check it out, folks. Technical Consumer Products got a great portal. What was the name of their the line that we were talking about earlier? It slipped my mind.
Holistic natural sunlight.
Solistic. Go get them.
Yeah. Yep.
The funnest people in lighting, led by the great and mighty Ellis Yon, of course. And hey, man, you think you're good at lighting? You think you're real super hot stuff? Come on down to the NAILD convention and talk to where the real tough guys are. That's right. Go to NAILD.org. Join us in Dallas, Texas. And of course, you know we love you guys. Thanks for listening and watching wherever you are. Follow us on social media or don't. Whatever. Thank you.